Hello and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Thanks for joining us on the conversation this week. My guest is Crawfordsville Mayor Todd Barton. And we'd like to point out that you can call in your questions today during the show. Call 765-496-1999. You can also email those to ask@wbaa.org. And you can tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. Mr. Mayor, good afternoon and Happy New Year.
Good afternoon. Good to hear from you.
I'd like to point out that we've been doing this for a few years now, and I'm not sure I've ever asked you whether you're, like, are you a New Year's resolution kind of guy? Do you set goals for yourself when the calendar turns over, or is it just kind of like, you strike me as just a stay the course kind of guy?
I'm a stay the course kind of person, yeah. I don't really get into, you know, it's January 1 and some magical things happen, and all of a sudden we're going to change things. So, no, I'm pretty much a stay the course and make adjustments throughout the year, or I try to anyway, as I see fit.
So in that sort of vein of staying the course, I wanted to ask about something that you did for the 73rd time last night, which is your meeting with the mayor, which you do most months, and you find a place in the community and people can come and ask you whatever they want. Did you think, first of all, when you started this, you would do 73 of them?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I promised when I ran that I would do this every single month. If the people hired me for this job, I would do this every month as long as I was mayor. So I've had no doubt that, you know, as long as I was in here, however many months that would be, I would continue to do this. And I have no doubts that I will continue down the road. So 73 of them, we're getting close to the big 75 mark. And they're interesting, you know. Sometimes, now this particular one this month was one of the less exciting that I've had probably, but I think it was the time of day, the weather was a big factor, and January is typically a slow time.
What kinds of things did people bring up at this most recent one?
Not much. You know, there was some discussion of stormwater issues. That is a pretty recurring thing, different parts of the city with drainage issues and how that, you know, then when it freezes turns into ice and how is that cleared from their streets. So there was some of that discussion. There were a couple of questions about trash pickup. Some economic development questions, and then one person came to talk about just some general questions about the police department.
As you do these month by month, do you find that you are getting the same topics over and over from people? You mentioned stormwater being one that recurs. Is there anything ever new anymore? Does somebody ever just kind of blow your mind with what they ask you?
Yes, yes. That doesn't happen every month, but, you know, from time to time, every few months, somebody will come in with something that you think, wow, I hadn't thought of that, or no one's asked me that yet. So I do get different, unique things. And, you know, the community forums really are trying to strike a balance. Sometimes it's difficult because a lot of times you'll have the people who come, the regulars who come quite a bit, and they're more interested in just, you know, tell us what's going on, you know, what about this project, what about that project. And you have to strike a balance between that and the newcomer or someone who comes once who has a very specific question or issue. So, you know, how do you spread your time out between those two things? And I think we do a good job. I just try to recognize that either this person who's new wants to be part of the bigger conversation or they want to talk to me one-on-one off to the side about a specific concern.
Can you think of a recent concern or topic that somebody brought to you where it hadn't been discussed before, or you thought, hey, I've really never had to address that, and I'll have to go find that answer? Anything stick out like that?
You know, in the last few months, there was some stuff related to parks and how we approach promoting activities in the parks and things like that that I had never really, you know, hadn't been on my radar screen before. You know, typically it's just some very specific question about a particular department or a specific policy that we have. And, you know, and it's interesting, sometimes you'll have people at this with very differing views, and there's always that temptation, if you will, to start talking about much bigger issues, and I a lot of times have to bring it back. You know, we're not gonna sit here and argue about Congress, and, you know, I mean, we can talk about it for a few minutes, and if you want my take on it, that's fine. Mine is like anybody else's, but let's talk about Crawfordsville. What questions do you have about local government and what we're doing here?
Same sort of thing about this show, as a matter of fact.
Pretty much, yes.
Well, let's talk about something fairly local. Your Board of Public Works has approved plans to spend about $15,000 to upgrade your city's aquatic center. What does that amount of money actually pay for? And the reason I ask is because West Lafayette is considering how it might spend as much as $25 million to build an aquatic center from scratch, essentially. And the pools, part of that is incredibly expensive. You could use potentially half of that $25 million on just aquatic facilities, to say nothing of whatever else you could put in this rec center that West Lafayette is thinking of building. So what do you get for just $15,000?
Right. Well, this is a very different scenario than that. I mean, we already have the Aquatic Center. It's an amazing facility, unquestionably one of the best in the state of Indiana, probably one of the best in the Midwest. You know, if you're a competitive swimmer or diver and you live in that world, you pass through the Crawfordsville Aquatic Center probably at some point in your career. You know, and we are drawing in, we have Great Lakes Valley Conference coming next month. We're drawing in these larger collegiate conferences for these events. And what we're trying to do here, the facility's in great shape. We don't need to do much. They have made a specific request, and we've had it before, to upgrade the timing equipment. And we're upgrading the starting blocks, and I'm not, really up on the latest technology there, but it's an automated system that ties into the block, and then you have the pads in the wall, and it hooks it all together. So we are upgrading that. It's a system that is consistent with what these athletes experience when they go to the next level or the Olympic level or something like that. So we will be one of the very, very few aquatic centers to have that technology already in place, and it will help us not only keep conference events like that but attract other events. The money that we're putting in is just one piece of that puzzle. The Aquatic Center is actually owned by the Crawfordsville School Corporation. It was a joint city school venture many years ago, and we still operate it like that. So they're putting money in. The Visitors Bureau is putting money in from the innkeeper's tax, and I believe the local swim club, Sugar Creek Swim Club, is putting some money in as well. So we're all pooling our money to upgrade to this next level of starting and timing equipment, if you will.
You mentioned getting out of the starting blocks, and so allow me to use this as a jumping-off point, the starting blocks, if you will, for kind of a larger discussion here for the next few minutes. You said you want to attract more of the swim meets like the one you've got coming in next month and that you have from other swimming groups. And it seems to me that this is kind of indicative of the way your city is trending where outside revenue is concerned, because you've been trying to find ways for people to come on weekends to spend their cash and then head home, whether it's a canoe race or motocross or, you know, Taste of Crawfordsville or something like that. This is something that you and I have talked a fair number of times on this show about, and I'm wondering if this is something that would be a centerpiece of what makes sense for a city Crawfordsville's size to be doing in terms of trying to bring in revenue rather than trying to say we're going to go from 16,000 people to 25,000 people or something like that in the next X number of years?
Well, I think it's one component of the overall strategy. I don't think in and of itself, I don't think it's the magic answer, but if you combine that together with some moderate growth and with the other pieces, then it all makes sense. And that's what we're trying to do is, you know, we're really not out to put all of our eggs in one basket. We are trying to be good at several things and distribute that evenly to really raise us to the next level. But, you know, if we were starting from scratch today, you know, you might question, you know, those are tough markets. Those are tough things to compete in. But we already have all these resources right here at our fingertips. We're probably foolish if we don't try to capitalize on those. So when you have an absolutely amazing state-of-the-art aquatic center and you have the museums that we have and you have this unbelievable motocross facility already here, you better take advantage of it. And that's what we're trying to do.
On the other hand, in terms of trying to grow your city, trying to grow the amount of revenue you bring in, this is not the Wild West that it used to be in the Midwest, where you'd have a railroad come through and all of a sudden your town would become a city, or you'd start a new university and West Lafayette goes from being this tiny little thing at the top of a hill to a sprawling community. I mean, you really can't do that very much anymore unless you're planning a community from scratch, which of course you're not. And so in terms of this being an economic development component, doesn't it make a certain sort of sense to have it be a sizable component? Because you can bring people in for a short while in a way that it would be very hard for a city of your size or with the sort of, I have to say it, lack of amenities compared to a Greater Lafayette or in Indianapolis or nearby places. It's much easier to say, come for this weekend motocross race than it is to say, come and stay in Crawfordsville because you have X, Y, or Z, right?
Well, perhaps, but again, you're only going to get so much, you know, fuel from something like that. And if they're here on the weekend, and even if they spend a fair amount of money, they come and go, and then what? You know, so you're building a lot of infrastructure and a lot of capacity just to have people here part of the time. And don't get me wrong, we absolutely want that, but you know, you have to balance that out with growing the community as well. And the amenities, as you mentioned, are an important piece of that, and we're trying to focus on that. But it is tough today for a community to just take off and grow rapidly unless you are, you know, sitting on the edge of a major metropolitan area like Indianapolis. That is a very, very difficult thing to do. And when you look at the data and the predictions, most communities in Indiana are predicted to shrink over the next decade or two. So you know, when you consider that, just staying stable is a task, and trying to grow is even more daunting.
It seems a little bit like a chicken and egg type problem, because you might only be able to convince more developers to do things like create hotel rooms or restaurants or other amenities if there's demand for those things. But then at the same time, you might only get that demand if people are choosing your town to hold their events, which, of course, is done in part when they consider, well, what amenities are there if we're doing something outside of going to the swim meet or something like that?
I use that analogy all the time. I think most of what we work with in community development, economic development, tourism, is exactly the chicken and the egg scenario. It's finding that balance of, I guess, how much of the one or the other can we get to start stimulating the other side to make these things take off? And that's the key. I mean, it's hard for communities to figure that out, and it works differently in different communities. I think we're getting some success, and we have some traction, and we're gaining momentum, you know, on that issue. But it is the chicken and the egg. There's no doubt.
As we've talked about these weekend events that your city brings in, I'm not sure I've ever asked, do you think you have enough hotel rooms around there, restaurants to sustain the visitors, so that you can have a weekend presence with lots of visitors with some regularity?
That depends on who you ask. You know, when you look at the raw data, we have quite a few hotel rooms out by the interstate. Now, that number actually has fluctuated a little bit and probably has shrunk over the last year, because there's one property, I think, that's no longer renting. So you'll see an ebb and flow there. So right now, for most of our events, we're in pretty good shape. Now, you know, in February when GLVC comes, that answer very clearly is no, we don't have the capacity. The teams themselves will fill every hotel room in this community, leaving nothing for spectators and families and you know, other people who come to follow that. So in those events, we do not have enough. And I think we have to look at the types of properties you have as well. You know, you have the chains by the interstate. There certainly is a demand for something other than that. The boutique hotel we talk about with the Ben-Hur building all the time, I think that demand will be very high. We see that pretty clearly. So we do need to grow that capacity. You know, you have those busy times, those busy weekends, that the question is how you maintain it during those off times. And you have to make sure you have enough events going on to at least get enough, you know, occupants in there during those, you know, in January, let's say.
So let's talk about the other side of this equation, which is the permanent residents of Crawfordsville and what they can do. And so if you're looking at somebody who might create a business, maybe it's somebody who comes to you and says, Mr. Mayor, I have this hobby of home brewing beer. I'm thinking of creating a brew pub or something in downtown. What sorts of incentives can the city offer somebody like that who's creating a small one-off business, not a potential for a chain or anything, somebody who may not have a ton of startup capital to invest? Is there anything the city can do for that person or is it easier for you to have a larger developer who's got more financial wherewithal? Is that type of development more likely to happen than the person who's the home brewer who wants to start the brew pub?
Historically, I don't think there's any doubt. It's been much easier to help that larger company, you know, that wants to come here, wants to grow. There's absolutely no doubt about that. We've not been focused, you know, and I say we, our community, or really much of the state, on those smaller pieces. That being said, I think that is changing, and we are developing more and more ability to focus on those smaller startups, and that's precisely the point of Fusion 54. The co-working, the accelerator space, very similar to what's happened, you know, with Matchbox and some of the things in the greater Lafayette area. We will be really focusing on those startup potentials, those smaller businesses that need nurtured and need resources and maybe need some incentives to grow and plant their roots right here in our community. That project is underway and will be completed by mid-year, occupied by the fall, and will have a very, very heavy emphasis on the small businesses and the startups.
What do you hope to be able to offer those small businesses when you're up and going and at full steam with Fusion 54?
Well, they'll have the environment. They'll have the environment with other creative people. They'll also have, you know, right there under one roof, they will have the economic development professionals, the Main Street folks, the Chamber of Commerce, all of those resources right there that they can, you know, very easily tap into and connect them with additional resources. You know, and we're looking constantly at our city's approach, and we're working on a project right now that's a pretty small company. And we're having to step back and rethink how we approach this. You know, we're used to dealing in terms of the giant company who wants to add, you know, X number of jobs. So how do we scale incentives to a smaller project? And I think we're kind of coming up with a formula to do that. This first one's going to be a test, and I'm very, very optimistic about that project, and hope we have an announcement here in another month or so. But we are learning to scale that to the smaller pieces. And I've heard that question or that criticism, if you will, for a while. You know, you're willing to help, you know, the big company, but what about John who wants to start this business? And it's a fair question, and it's something we're addressing.
A couple of months ago on our program with Mayor McBarnes from Frankfort, I had to apologize for what's probably sounded like a very cynical question from me to him. But what we keep hearing in terms of economic development at the local level is that there are certain things that if your city builds that everybody gets really excited by. Like if you say you're going to build a sports park or a splash pad or a brew pub or a co-working space, holy cow, everybody gets excited. But the question becomes, what is the real return on investment if you're going to do any of these seemingly buzzworthy things? And so, you know, because it seems to me that there's a certain group of people who are going to use a co-working space, but at the same time, there are only a few of them that seem to me that really are incubators for businesses. And that leaves open what would seem to be a really fertile ground of if some small space somewhere, some small city could say, we are really going to focus not on attracting the Amazons of the world to try to build their next headquarters here, but we want to build business by business. We want it to be a grassroots effort from within the people who live here or want to locate here for that sort of business climate. Is that, am I crazy, or is that a pie in the sky thing?
I think that's exactly where we are headed. You know, and for us, it's finding that balance. You know, now I'll be the first to tell you right here on record, Amazon's not coming to Crawfordsville. That's, you know, we know that and we expect that. But you know, we need a balance of you know, the larger companies, we need some of that, but we also need to be, we're missing the opportunities on the smaller side, and we're focusing more and more in that direction, balancing out what we're doing with the bigger companies. But you really have to create that environment. And it's interesting, people talk about the co-working space, I think they're trying to gauge if I'm concerned that it won't have enough business or there won't be enough activity there. And quite honestly, my concern is the opposite. I think it's going to be inundated because I know how many people work from their homes in this community. I know how many people are out there already reaching out to me, wanting to get involved. And so I think there's going to be a lot of activity there. Not every one of those will succeed, obviously, but it starts laying the groundwork and making those connections and networking for some really good things to happen. For me, I have to look at, you know, the graduates who leave Wabash College and go on and do, many of them, some pretty amazing things and get into biomed or, you know, all these other businesses that they start. If we just kept one or two of those here, we would be so much better off. So creating that environment to capture them and start to build some roots here before they take that idea elsewhere is important also.
You talked about how the Aquatic Center started out as a joint venture between the city and the school corporation. I wonder if you think it's possible to have more of those sort of public-private partnerships, or indeed between a couple of public entities like a school corporation and the city, to be able to foster this kind of growth. I think about what's going on here in West Lafayette with the State Street Project trying to create a downtown from scratch, essentially, you know, Purdue University paying up front, the city of West Lafayette paying the university back over time. And what they're both hoping to do is reap revenue that comes in from property taxes and things like that when new high-rise apartment buildings are built or new restaurants or retail spaces go in. Do you have that ability to partner with Wabash or something like that to say, hey, let's put some money together and let's really focus on these small businesses and being an incubator primarily for small companies and not trying to shoot for the moon?
I think we do. That is somewhat uncharted territory right now. But, you know, we're already thinking in terms of, you know, trying to address some of the key challenges we have, for example, in workforce in our community with, let's say, childcare or transportation issues. And so we hear our employers saying, look, you know, we need to grow the workforce. We need to move more people into the workforce. And then we hear people, you know, in the community saying, well, you know, lack of childcare and lack of transportation is an issue. So we're already approaching this. How can we partner with the companies involved to solve this problem? So it's not, you know, just the city or the taxpayer trying to fund this and make this work, but also those companies that have a stake in this trying to come to the table as well. So new territory for us, but I think there are some wonderful models out there around the state of Indiana and around the country that we can look at. Obviously, we're trying to partner with Wabash College more and more, and that, I think, will materialize over the years. It's better than it's ever been. Probably has a ways to go, but at least we've gotten started.
Seems like it would also take a concerted effort on the part of the city council or the Board of Public Works or the county commissioners to say, we are really going to be focusing our resources in this way, because it would be a sea change.
It would be. It would be. You know, and again, it's about prioritizing and looking at all the different things that are on our plate, from public safety to economic development to quality of life, and you know, you'd have to figure out what that balance is between all those categories.
While we're on the subject of talking about Wabash College a little bit, I wanted to ask you whether people are talking there about the fact that the school is among what's actually a fairly small group of schools nationwide that looks like it's going to have its endowment taxed by the president's tax reform, tax overhaul package, the idea being that they look at a calculation of how many students do you have versus what is your endowment size. And the people who are largely being hit by this are the Harvards and University of Texas systems of the world. But Wabash and maybe even DePauw down the road might fall prey to this as well.
Well, I know President Hess has been pretty active in that discussion and had actually penned some letters that ran in different publications around the country. My understanding is the impact on Wabash would be about $350,000 a year. So, you know, you have to weigh that out. What does that mean? How many students do we no longer give financial aid to? You know, what does that really look like in reality? And I know they're working on that. They're having those discussions. And, you know, I've heard that there's probably an equal impact or maybe even greater on DePauw down 231. So it's something that I know they're working on, they're watching, and for us, we'll do anything we can to help support that. I don't know. I'm not sure how it's going to look in the end, though.
One or two other things in just our last couple of minutes. I know you're not a direct part of the conversations about the wind farm possibilities in the northern part of your county, but it just seems to be getting weirder every time I look at it. And the reason I say that is because there have been recent meetings, and I just can't get over how it seems that people in your county and people in Clinton County either are uninformed about wind farms or don't feel like they want to be informed or are afraid of something they don't know about? Because, and I say this because there was concern about at a recent meeting in your county about the 30 decibels of wind noise that a wind turbine might make. And to give people a sense of the comparisons here, that's something between like a babbling brook and a whisper in terms of volume. And so when that was mentioned and kind of debunked, a county commissioner there then said he was worried about the traffic near a proposed wind farm, when, of course, the whole point is build these to be passive energy generators and then leave them alone. So what in the world is going on with that discussion?
Well, you know, I said several months ago, I think on this show, that it was a weird discussion. It much of it just flat doesn't make any sense, and it's actually become an interesting topic of study for colleges around the country. I mean, you won't get a more interesting political discussion in which you have competing interests and interests that actually conflict themselves, you know, and I point this out, but, you know, to say, hey, I am absolutely against planning and zoning. I'm absolutely against any kind of land control. However, I want to tell my neighbor down the road he can't put this wind turbine on. That doesn't make any sense. And so it's been a very interesting conversation. The commissioner's last meeting was held here in City Hall. They were doing some work at the courthouse, so they had their meeting here. And it was packed. It was packed. And you know, as I read this stuff, as I watch this discussion take place, I think you're exactly right. There are a lot of people just absolutely not doing their homework on their own. You know, when something's on the internet or it's plastered on social media, you better do your own homework instead of just taking that for what you see there. And I don't see that happening. And I guess it's probably more of a symptom of the larger problem that we have in this country, and that is when it comes to issues involving, you know, government and politics and all that, people just don't listen. I'm thoroughly convinced of that. They will not listen to one another and try to really, you know, educate themselves and make an informed decision. And I keep seeing the anti-windmill group here post articles about how other counties have stopped windmills. And I want to just say, you know, ask them the question, have you actually read the article? Because what it says is they stopped it through planning and zoning. You know, it just doesn't make any sense.
Real quick, in just our last couple of moments, you mentioned the goings-on at the courthouse. They've begun construction of the base that will eventually be the clock tower. Do you have a sense of when that's going to be finished?
From what I heard last, I think we're looking at late May, maybe June, somewhere in there. So this summer, for sure, it'll be done and up. They have to do the work inside to ready the building and then building the base. The actual clock tower itself is prefabricated, comes in a couple of three pieces. They put it up, put it all together. So it won't take long. It'll be in place. And that's really going to change the look of downtown Crawfordsville. We'll see what happens.
All right. Well, Mr. Mayor, as always, we've run out of time before I ran out of questions. So much to talk about next month, and we'll look forward to chatting with you at the end of February.
Very good. Thank you.
This has been Ask the Mayor on WBAA. Thanks for listening to the show today. Remember, you can find archived versions of all of these shows at our website. That's WBAA.org. Send a question at any time for any of our four mayors to ask@WBAA.org. And listen at this time next week for our conversation with West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Support for WBAA comes from your membership and Encompass Credit Union, supporting Ask the Mayor and offering a full line of financial services to the people of Clinton and Tipton counties while supporting the communities they serve. More information at EncompassCU.org.